What was that maniacal laugh before I
don't know.
Hit record? Song.
Just lightening the mood.
Oh, okay. You did it. Oh, and I don't even think it was recorded.
The
before
show.
It was just a really weird little giggle laugh. Anyway, how's it going?
Going good. I'm paying my bills, as you guys could see.
Yeah. And here.
Yeah. So I'll mute.
We got on and we're chatting, and Jimmy just holds up this stack of paper, a bunch of envelopes, and he's like, yeah, these are my bills.
It's like stacked up my like dogs. Clubs, stacked up like excited. A club sandwich. Dave, what is that reference?
Oh, I am missing some sort of comedic reference.
Oh, no, it's a Kid Rock song from the 90s.
Oh,
my bills stacked high like a club sandwich.
Oh,
back when you used to be
a Kid Rock in this house.
Back when you used to be a Kid Rock supporter.
Remember? Yeah, no, let's not start that rumor.
David, the show's coming up. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm buried in it. And the artwork is due to the gallery on the 15th. So that is less than 2 weeks away. So it's going to be about 25 things. And I wish there was more. I wish there was more time, but it is what it is. We're working on kind of like what is the main centerpiece. I think I've talked about it before, but there's going to be this big sheet of plywood that will say unsubscribe, which is the name of the show. And then hanging on that plywood is 200 little panels. And together, all the little panels will also say unsubscribe. And the thought of this is like, art can be expensive, and so you can buy these individual little pieces, which will be much cheaper, artwork that you can take home. And typically with the gallery stuff, when you purchase something, you don't get it right there, right then and there, because it's a 2-day event. So a lot of the stuff will be shipped or delivered, or we'll arrange a pickup. But this part is kind of like a living piece where you can buy the individual little panel, you take it right then and there. And then as you pull that panel away, the backing board still says unsubscribe. And so I thought, because I hate myself, I thought I would make all the little panels, which are around 5 inches by 6 inches, to use nothing but scraps that I've just been collecting over the last couple of years. And so each one of these little panels is a 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch chopstick, random species, all glued to a piece of plywood. And because it's all scrap wood, I can hear myself echoing.
Jimmy, you might want to back up a little bit. I think you're echoing.
So, because you would think you would just glue a bunch of 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch square dowels onto a long board and then cut that board into the pieces. But because we're dealing with scraps, some of them are just barely long enough. So we actually had to make 3,500 little chopsticks and then glue them onto the
board. That's a lot of prep there. It looks great.
Yeah, it's been insane. I thought maybe this part would take a day, but it's taken multiple days.
No.
Just because you're cutting at the table saw for so long, you need mental breaks. You're cutting small pieces.
You turn your finger into a chopstick and you don't realize it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. So it's been a process, and I think it's going to look cool. I still haven't gotten to the part where it says unsubscribe. And we actually made 215 because I need some to practice on. You know, something's going to happen, so I need extras to play with. So, over 3,500 pieces for this major piece.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was. It's I would do it differently next time.
So, you said you had to CNC out the words from all of them. So, how are you going to get all the panels together as a single piece to CNC the?
Oh, Bob. Oh, we will individually CNC each 200 of the 200 panels. Yes. So the file will be broken down into 200. We will stick this in there, and it should just go in two passes. So each one should only take a couple minutes. I'll have a jig set up where I can clamp and unclamp quickly. But yeah, like I said, I hate myself, so I've given myself lots of work.
So they're really buying a piece of your anguish.
That's they are, actually, yes. And hopefully taken that away from me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That
yeah.
will be removed from my life. I will
replacing anguish
from...
with money. Yeah, yes. That's cool. yeah. Wow, yeah, that's a lot. That's yeah. Cool. Well, I'm glad it's at least moving along. And you
it's
that grunt work done, you know.
It's I'm in a good rhythm. It's not sustainable. I could use a break, but I mean, I knew this was going to happen, and I do it to myself.
It's good to have a deadline, though.
What's
It's good to have a deadline.
Without a deadline, I wouldn't do anything. I can't survive without a deadline. I would just let things linger. I would have half-baked projects everywhere.
Well, I'm glad that it's moving along, and I'm excited for you to have the show. I really wish I was going to be there, but I'm also excited for you to have done the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the day after for you to be like, done.
It's, you know. It does feel kind of like a turning point because I've always made like little art pieces here and there, but since I've been all in for the last couple months, that's all I think about. And I have all these ideas and a lot of them I just don't have time to execute. And I feel like since I've just been in a full on creative mode for months now, like I think this will trickle down into my projects, into the type of content that I make. And getting this first one out of the way, I've learned so much about what I enjoy making, what I don't enjoy making. And I don't know, it feels like this is a milestone, a pivot point in the future of whatever I'm going to be.
That's awesome. What about you, Jimmy? Have you had any milestones this week?
Oh, milestones. Not little milestones. Whereas, you know, there's projects that sit and linger and taunt you, and you promise somebody, and then the project, you walk by it every day, and then finally you get that email. It's like, hey, how's the project going? And you're like, it's going great. And you haven't touched it until you get that email.
Yeah, almost done. Almost done.
I need, you know what? Speaking of that, when I commit to something, I need one communication where somebody bugs me. I just need one.
How's it going email.
Yes. I don't know why, but I need that one.
Well, I'll tell you what, my cousin reached out to me a few months ago, and he lives in the South with his wife, and his wife's family owned a carnival. And they've lived down there forever, and I only just met her because it's an extended part of my mother's family. So Billy and his wife came up. They sent me an email. They said, hey, we have this carnival thing. It's a small little carnival attraction that used to belong to the family's carnival, which has been sold many years ago. And in commemoration of my father-in-law and his carnival, I think he's passed, can you take this crane toy, this crane-operated crane that would pick up candy and drop it into a slot, and build us a cabinet for it? Because when they sold the carnival, they took a couple of things as mementos, and this was one of them, and nobody's ever built a cabinet for it. Apparently, it was like part of like a thing where there was like four of them in a row, and they took one of the mechanisms out. And I was like, yeah, sure, bring it by. It sounds like a fun build. So he brought it by, and this very haphazard build had been started by somebody in the family, and they realized they went over their head, and so the project stopped. And then I got this mechanical crane toy from the 1920s. I was under the impression that he made it, that the father-in-law made it years ago. And it looks like it's handmade, but it turns out it's an Erie crane carnival toy from the 1920s. And I was able to find more of them on YouTube. And no box, the mechanism didn't work. And so when I finally got the email the other day, how's it going? We're going to be up there in June. You think it'll be ready? I pulled it, grabbed it off the porch, brought it to the shop, started tinkering with it, and actually became really intrigued. So when you say milestone, the milestone is that I actually became intrigued with this thing that's been taunting me for weeks sitting in the porch. Every time I walk by it, I'm like, I got to get to that project. I got to fix that thing. And then when I got into it and I started realizing the mechanism actually wasn't broken, it just needed some grease, and the grease was holding certain mechanisms from falling into place. It's this very complicated yet simple watch mechanism. When you crank the handle, the crane turns randomly and stops randomly. There's a randomizer in it, and drops down, picks up a piece of candy, all in the same action. You just keep cranking it. It loops once, turns, drops, picks up, turns back, and lets go into the chute. And now they're all, if you see them, they're obviously digital and electromechanical. But this is all mechanical. You just turn the crank and it works. It didn't work for a minute and I fixed it. So when I got it fixed, I started to become like, oh, now I get it. And then I started finding more online. And then I started to be like, oh, okay, this is a good project. I'm excited about this now. I don't know if I showed it to my patrons. I might have. Yeah, I did. I did show them one thing working. And so I got excited about it, but it was taunting me. I was like, why did I say yes? Why did I say yes to this? I got a million other things to do. Why did I say yes to this? But I'm really excited about it now. So I started the woodwork last night. I have lots of scrap walnut paneling, too small to do anything with, but it's perfect for this. So I CNC'd up the box last night, and there's a little bit of other like skilled woodwork involved with putting edges and stuff. So I'm excited. It's all going to, even though I use the CNC to make the panels, all the CNC is going to be disguised by woodwork. It's going to be a box, and on top of the box is a glass case, and in that case is the crane. In fact, my buddy, I sent some pictures out to Andrew because it's a real vintage antique, and right away Andrew said, oh, this is the one I just sold. He had one that he sold. Almost crazy. The same exact thing. In a box. I'll send you guys a picture of it. So yeah. I'm working on that, and I'm also working on my go-kart. I got the electric motor in and running, and that's pretty amazing. And actually, that's the video I'm going to recommend this week. You guys go check out Spark Cycle Works. I'll talk about it at the end. And we put the motor in, and I'm working on the brakes. And once I get the motor's working totally fine. And once I get the brakes in, I'll be able to go for a test drive. I just need to weld on some sort of steering wheel. It'll be the very first, so I could test drive it. Then I could spend all of June just doing the body, which is the exciting part. So that's where I'm at.
Is this awesome go-kart going to be recycled and reused every year with a new body?
No, I'll probably just park it aside and make another one. I'm running out of room in there. And all my other go-karts are all damaged from hitting the wall and stuff. So I got to go and grab those and get those working. What'd you say, Dave?
You just buy another property. That's what happens when you run out of room.
That's a good idea.
Well, instead of buying another property, you just make your own version of that Carvana like vending machine thing, but it's all for go-karts. And you can just stack them up. You can have a tower right in the middle of your compound.
I need that.
Yeah. Actually, you do need that. That would be pretty fantastic to have all your trucks on a giant, cylinder. That'd be cool.
But I'm excited about
the crane anything machine. Like that, like the New York parking garages where it moves the cars up and down. That's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And a little valet.
That would be hilarious.
I said little.
You have a valet at your own home for your cars. Wow. That is over the top. That's cool.
I'm sending you guys a picture.
I have been working on the climbing wall finally this week. I only had going into this week, I only had 3 days to work, including today. We're leaving tomorrow for our trip and our first trip. And so it was like, well, I don't really have time to make any progress on the next thing, you know, which is the climbing wall, but I've been really excited about it and I've just been anxious to get started. So I kind of dove in on Monday thinking, well, I'll get a couple of things done and, you know, just so I feel like I got it started. And as of last night at about 9 o'clock, I had the big 12-foot wall up. I have an 8-foot wall up. And then I started building the little, it's hard to explain, but there's shorter angled walls that are going to come in the corners of the ceiling. And so I've actually made a lot of progress on it. And it's really cool. It feels great to have. It's weird that it closes in a space that was big and open, you know, because you do angled walls, they lean in on you, but it also feels really cool to be in there and you have this thing kind of coming out over top of you in multiple directions. And, so I don't know that I'll be able to get a whole lot more done on it before we leave, but it just feels good to have it started. And there's this weird excitement about building that because I mean, I've had I've built many climbing walls throughout my life, and I've had them at different points in life. Like when I was in high school, I made my first one, and it was in our 7.5 foot tall basement. So it was like, you know, not tall, but it was something I could climb on. And then in college, we rented a house and I built one in the backyard, which then I took it down and moved it to the first place that Jenny and I lived. And then we moved it to the next place and modified it for the kids. And then we moved up here. I had to take it down and get rid of it, but we built one in the kids' room, the boys' room, and we built one out at the farm. But the last several have been for the kids. They've been intentionally made for the kids to get on as young kids and have fun. Now they're all big and don't climb on them. So this one is for me. Mm. And so it's scaled and shaped for me to be on and be active on. But the thing that's really, I was thinking about this yesterday while I was working on it. The thing that's interesting is that I've had this long history of climbing on occasion. It's not something I've ever done all the time. You know, it's not like running I do all the time because it's just a thing that I got to doing. Climbing is something I'll do here and there. And I always enjoy it, but to get stronger and to get better at it, you have to kind of stick with it because it's a whole different set of muscles than what you use for most daily stuff. And I haven't done that in a really long time. And I was thinking about putting this wall up. I was excited about the history of having climbed. And then I kind of had this, I don't want to say realization, but I remembered today. I remembered, yeah, but I'm not a 20-year-old. Like I was last time I built myself a wall. And so I'm excited about the fact that I get to climb again, but I also have to take into account the fact that it's going to be a lot harder to do than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's the point. You know, it gives me something to work on and get stronger at and everything. But it was like I had to temper my excitement a little bit with this is actually going to be hard too. So it's kind of strange, but I'm still excited about it. I'm excited about building it and having it. So,
do you keep reusing the grippy bits over the last 20 years, or do you get new ones for each wall?
The holds, yeah. I mean, I've added a lot over the years, but
they're called grippy bits.
Yeah, real climbers call them grippy bits. I've added a bunch over the years, but I've still got the original ones from way back in the day. Hmm. And when I was in high school, I didn't have a way to buy them. And so I just made a bunch out of wood and like plywood and whatever scrap I could find and would just screw them directly to the plywood, you know, and that worked fine for that. More recently, I've found a couple of YouTube channels where the whole channel is building wooden climbing holds and they get these chunks of exotic hardwoods and it's just the process of carving this into something that is both easy and difficult to hold and, you know, texturing them or not texturing them adds a different level to how useful they are. And I don't know, this is really interesting because I think of wood being a terrible material for something like that, but there are people that only want wooden climbing holds on their walls. It's kind of interesting. And so I may end up doing something like that in the future. I was thinking about, you know, maybe finding a log at some point, maybe taking one out of the farm and then cutting it into chunks and making holds from it. So like the whole process, making some cool holds and then getting them on the wall, but they have to be hardwood. So yeah, it kind of depends on what I can get access to.
An outsider's perspective, it seems like, the whole climbing community is like growing. I see a lot more of it. In fact, just down the road, there's a new facility that opened up. It's just for climbing. Like, what has caused this climbing boom?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I think, COVID hurt it a lot because, you know, it's a very, at least gyms are a very community based, everybody goes to one closed box and breathes really hard. That, you know, and for COVID, that was really bad. So everybody couldn't go to the gyms that they were used to going to. And so I think over the last couple of years, now that that has lifted and everything has gotten back to normal, people are again looking for both community and exercise and stuff. And so it's probably one of those things that you don't need a lot of stuff to do. Like you can buy shoes and you can buy chalk bags, but you don't have to buy like a bike and certain clothes and, you know, a bunch of extra stuff. You just like go to a place, pay $5 and climb for a while and then get tired. So I think it's, from that perspective, it's probably an accessible way to do something new and exercise for people. So that's probably why. But I don't know. It's something I've always been interested in, I've enjoyed doing, and I've always wanted to own a gym. I've always wanted to open a gym. And I don't know that this sounds morbid and I don't mean it this way, but I don't know if there's a spot in the rest of my life for that. You know what I mean? I don't know if there's, if it's realistic for me to create a gym and start a whole nother business at some point from here on out, which is okay. But it has always been a thing that I've wanted to try to do, but I don't know. Building one in my house is probably my answer to that. I've got my own little climbing gym that nobody else has access to. Anyway, so I started working on that, and it feels cool to move that ahead. And I've got, three other videos already shot for the next couple of months because we're going to be traveling. I mentioned that before. We're going to be traveling a lot. So this show will be on and off for the next several weeks, and that's 100% on me. But, you know, we'll do it when we can. But that's kind of what I've been up to. And then just like, you know, prepping to leave and summer stuff. Spend a lot of time in the pool and a lot of time with the kids doing things. And yeah.
Summer's here.
It is. It is definitely here.
But it's still cold.
Is it really?
It's been pretty cold. Dave, has it been cold up near you?
The last week has been pretty good. But, you know, just a few days ago, I was thinking, I think it was last week. We had the AC on one day and we had the heater on the next day. It was crazy, cold
much more often than warm.
Oh, yeah. Not here. It's been hot. And so our AC stopped working a few days ago and it was just hot. You know, it was like 85 outside. And so the inside of the house, it was just creeping up. And I was like, man, we're getting ready to leave on this trip and I don't have to deal with like calling somebody to come out. And so I looked into it. And of course, the first thing everybody says is check your capacitor. So the first time I've ever had to actually do this myself, I went and got the capacitor, discharged it, tested it. Yep, it's dead. Went to the store, found the right one, put it back in. AC works. And it cost $25. Nice. It was awesome.
Whoa. Is it it's screwed in with screws or is it soldered? I think capacitor at this right here.
Oh, wow. There's a band clamp that was like screwed in, holding it in place. There's three wires that go on the top and you just unplug them. You have to discharge these, like otherwise you will die. I don't know if you'll die, but it's going to hurt a whole lot when you get shocked with one of these.
You discharge it with like a screwdriver? What do you do?
Yeah. You just take a screwdriver and cross the terminals and an insulated screwdriver. But yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know, 10 minutes to pull it out and put the new one in, $25, you know, and I guarantee you if I had called our HVAC people to come do that, it would have been well over 100, you know, just for the visit and for the part and whatever. So if you run into that, if your AC stops working, that is a place to start. And if you have a multimeter, you can test the capacitor to see if that's actually the problem or not before you buy one, so. That felt pretty cool to get that done. We don't really have a topic
today. I got a question to ask you guys.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Did you have something? Did you have a topic you wanted to lean into?
No, I was going to look at my paper and see what we had written down from the past, but go for it.
The idea of apprenticeship. There are moments in time where I realize that I have missed an apprenticeship on certain things. Like this weekend, this last week's video was I made a cushion. And I was very insecure about the cushion for this airplane video that I did. I made it a slipcover so it can come off. In the event that Mark, the guy I was making it for, looked at it and go, that looks horrible. That's not at all what I wanted. So I made it so it could pop off. which is fine because it would need to be, I couldn't permanently affix it to it unless I had like several meetings with him, how we would want to do it, which was impossible. He's there. I'm here. He seemed to make it seem like whatever you do is going to be fine. So that's, I just approached it the way that I thought was safe. But making the cushion, there were certain things. I was like, I wish I had an apprenticeship in this. I'm literally just making it completely on my own based on what I've seen in the garbage. And what, you know, the idea of like changing a cushion, what the inside of that slipcover looks like. So I don't have proper instruction. Obviously, there's YouTube and I'm looking, and then there's just practice. But the idea of an apprenticeship that I'm basically having with pottery, there's so many questions that I get the answer to. And Dave always will take me down the road. Dave's my pottery guru. And he'll say, oh, let me show you. So I've been making plates lately on my own, and I keep making plates, and I'm like, how am I going to get all this clay stretched out to be a plate? Every plate I make turns out to be like 6 inches wide, and with some shrinkage, it ends up being like, after everything, it's like a 6-inch plate. I'm like, you can't, it's like more of like an hors d'oeuvre plate. And I'm using 2 pounds of clay. And he goes, well, how much I'm using? He goes, oh, you got to use 4 pounds, at least 4 pounds. He goes, well, let's do 4.5. And so this is when I was there last week, and he like put out 4 or 5 lumps of clay, each one being 4.5 pounds. He goes, use that. He goes, now you have a lot more to carve off later. You could really shape your plate. And so just simple things like that. Whereas me being timid alone, not knowing the right way, but then the guru's like, do this. This is what you'll do. It's just like, just to take your head and point it in the right direction, because you don't know which direction to point it in. And that's what I feel like I've missed a few different times in my life. Obviously, everyone says you got YouTube, but the intimacy of working with someone like I have been with Dave, and the idea that he just says, let me just show you. And he brings me over to his wheel, and he just does a thing, and I always videotape what he's telling me. And that idea of that, and is in some cases, for instance, when I was making the airplane seat, I'm like, I should just go find a really skilled upholsterer and just like go work for him for free for a couple of days, at least a week or 2 weeks or whatever, at least set up a schedule where I can go and hang out with him. And that's always a possibility with any particular, as long as you could tap into a relationship and make friends with somebody and there's a mutual exchange that you both can benefit from, whether it's just straight up pay or, hey, I do this for you, you do that for me. It's interesting. Dave and I are friends. He's like, doesn't even want any money. So I'm like, I try and bring him gifts and signs and molds that I think he needs. And the other day, I noticed his pottery sign is like part rotted. I said, I'm making you a new sign, whether you want it or not. And he laughed. He goes, okay, I'll do that. He goes, I'll accept that. And, so the idea of finding an apprenticeship with whatever it might be, even sometimes with construction, I have been working on the graveyard house, even though I haven't been showing much of it, putting in the latest floor, the latest and the last floor on the ground floor changing. So at this point, I will have changed every rafter in the ground floor of the building slowly, methodically, painfully. Talk about getting up and down a climbing wall as a 59-year-old. Every time I get down on my knees, I think to myself, what else can I do while I'm down here?
Yeah, make the most of this.
Yeah.
Do you have what's the person who's giving you apprenticeship? Master? Mm-hmm. I don't know. What. Do you have somebody like that? A guru? A splinter? Do you have a splinter for the framing, for the construction stuff that you've done?
Well, I grew up doing a lot of framing with my dad. So I spent a lot of time doing carpentry work growing up. But it's not something I do on the regular. You know, I always think to myself, I see someone like David the Mexican Carpenter, and I see how those guys could literally solve any problem by just doing a little Google or a little search. But they obviously have so much experience, they probably don't need to do that as often, if at all. But I'm not as lost with that. But when it comes to Like for instance, we're going to rip the floor out, and we ripped the floor out, and it's the room where the staircase is. And Mike, the kid that worked, Mike, the fireman, he says, well, we're going to rip the staircase out, right? I'm like, no, because I'll never go to the second floor ever again. I was like, we got to leave the staircase. He's like, no, we'll rebuild it. I'm like, yeah, by the time we rebuild it, there'll be an eagle's nest on the second floor. I'll never go up there. I was like, no. I said, I'm not going to rip the stairwell out. And right away, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm making everything more complicated by, like, this house is ripped completely apart. Mm. I'm like, I don't want to take it any further apart than it is because I just don't want to get into territory. Not that I'm afraid to attack things, but it's just like, that'll just take me in another offshoot, which is going to delay this project even more. Like, for me to have to make a whole new set of stairs, and plus the set of stairs is charming, it's antique, it's vintage, it looks like it's the original set of stairs to the second floor. But it's old and creaky, and Mike's always like, get rid of it. Let's just build a new one. I'm like, it's already done. That's like, that work's already done. We don't need to do that again.
Hmm.
So the idea of apprentice would like, I sometimes find myself venturing into territory that I am a little insecure about. I guess that's really the overarching concept. And I wish I had a guru for certain things.
Hmm.
And there is always YouTube, but the intimacy of just sitting down and talking to somebody that has 50 years worth of experience.
Yeah, the problem with YouTube is like, as a creator, the only thing that I'm going to put there is stuff that I think is valuable or I think is unknown or I think is worth putting there. But as somebody who's trying to learn something, you may have questions that are not answered by those things that I am saying or, you know, whatever. And yeah, the in-person is different because you can ask the more obscure questions and you get somebody's experience as the answer, whereas that person may not have even thought that that was worth making a video about or making a, or, you know, it didn't, or it's not findable because it's so topical that you can't really search for it. So, I mean, YouTube's good for some stuff, but not like what you're talking about. I think I feel that same way about some things. There's a lot of stuff that I don't want help with. I want to bumble through it. I want to do it wrong. I want to, you know,
but if I could point to you, like, if I could point to you with your car, for instance, like if you sat down with someone that does body work to give you like quick things like you're wasting too much time here, you need to focus here and you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Stuff like that.
Absolutely. That and sewing. I would love to know how to sew, but it feels like you're walking up to a lake and you're like, I want to get in this lake. And you look down and you can see into the water about 6 inches and then it's just black. That's what sewing feels like to me. Like there's no way I'm just going to jump in and start cutting and trying to sew. I'm going to ruin the machine. I'm going to ruin the material. Like I'm not going to do that. And because of that,
I still feel that way. I don't even try quite a bit. I've sewn obviously a lot, many, 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 many years I've been sewing. And there are times where I wish I could just turn to an expert and go, what am I supposed to do right here?
Yeah.
For me, the biggest thing is the feel. Like you don't know if this feels right, especially like what you're working with a tool and a material. I remember when, like, I wrote down a couple of examples in my life. Like, this is not really apprenticeship, but it's somebody there to guide me. When I got my first lathe, my buddy Sean came over. Like, I was afraid of the lathe because I know, like, oh, a tool can catch, and then next thing you know, you hit your chin with the tool. And Sean came over and just kind of showed me how to use it. And this person can guide you and let you know if you're doing it right or doing it wrong. And if you have questions about the feel. And another couple of times is taking a blacksmithing class at the art museum here. Like, I probably never would have hammered metal ever without somebody showing me how to do this. And so, you know, I paid for the class. It wasn't an apprenticeship, but having an instructor there using somebody else's tools to understand how things work was a huge eye opener for me. And also, caused me to buy a bunch of stuff. Like I bought a little forge and the hammers and all the stuff I needed for that. And then I took a bookbinding class at our local art store a few years ago. And I never would have done that at home. Like, of course, you can watch a YouTube video. But when somebody is there just guiding you along the way, you understand how the thread is supposed to go through there. And just using somebody else's tools helps you understand what tools you need.
Hmm.
I know when people get a new bandsaw, they have no idea how to tighten the blade, if it's too tight or too loose. And there's so many videos online, but it's all like, yeah, blade deflection and feel, and it's supposed to you, the old cooking thing when like, oh, you know your steak is medium rare when it feels like the palm of your hand. I'm like, that does not compute to my brain at all. So I don't know that I have access to apprenticeships, but I do have access to things that I can pay for and friends that are knowledgeable in this area.
Yeah. I think it's the same. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's a kickstart, right? It's like a concentrated experience dump from one person who has experience to you to help you get moving, to like start the momentum. Speaking of, I just want to throw this out there. My mom has been a sewer, sewist. A person who sews? I don't know what you call that.
Sewist.
My entire life. And she lives down the street from me. So I could learn to sew from my mom. And she listens to the show. So hi, Mom. So I want to throw that out there, that I do have an option to do that, but it's also kind of a hard thing to prioritize. But that's one of those, it's just one of those things that like when I think about doing it, I don't know where to start. But then when I have the time, I don't think about learning it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's things like that as well.
Yeah. When I made my jacket, there was several moments where I was like, I have no idea what to do next. Cause you could take a college course and learn how to sew with an instructor that makes clothes. Making clothes is an entire field of science on its own that you definitely need some instruction. I poked around in the dark and I was able to get a jacket that's somewhat wearable, but there were loose ends and there were things that I just didn't know how to finish. So I just finished them in my own way, which is not practical, which is not, wouldn't be acceptable for retail. But the other thing that if it's not clear is that I could talk for myself. I think you guys might identify. We're not experts. We just happen to show what we're learning. So when someone sees what we're doing and then they want to be super critical, I'm like, oh, everybody loves the expert. I'm like, I'm not an expert. I'm just willing to show what I am learning. And I have a lot of toys and a lot of things to play with. But I'm not sitting here saying I am the best craftsman at anything I've ever done. Some things I'm better at, obviously. Some things I'm learning. Some things come out, that's good. I'm glad I tried it. I got to do it again to make it better. And I got to do it again to make it better than that time. So that the other thing is like, we're learning sometimes and many times we're learning on a stage.
Yeah.
Sometimes it makes you a little self-conscious.
I heard something recently and I can't remember where I heard this, but the phrase was, learning over success. And I thought that was super cool. Like it's something I think we all feel and prioritize, but to actually put it into a little phrase like that, the point is learning, not success. Mm-hmm. And then that makes failure not a big deal because it wasn't the point. So if success is not the point, right? I thought that was really cool and I need to write it down somewhere so that I keep that as a thought. You were talking about, taking classes earlier. I tried to, we have a technical school here in town, community college and technical college, and they have an automotive department. And so a couple of years ago, registered and was going to like, I'm going to start taking some classes on the metalwork side of it and the electrical side of it. I just want to start to understand these things, not for it to become a career, not to get a degree. It's a local way for me to get that knowledge. And so then when I finally got to the point where I could start choosing the classes, it's set up like college. So for me to take a metalworking, like a bodywork class, that's like the fourth class in, I have to take a bunch of other stuff, even though I don't want a degree. And there may be a way to piecemeal classes. I don't really know. But as I was, trying to go down that path just to get some instruction on those things, it was too difficult for me to get to the thing that I actually wanted to learn through that system. And so that was kind of a bummer because it felt like all of the stuff after that, there was like a painting class and, I don't know, a few other ones, I couldn't even get to those because I would have to spend a couple of semesters taking classes that I didn't care about just to be able to level into those things. And anyway, so I couldn't find that type of instruction locally without a lot of extra effort. And so that was one of the things that bummed me out about working on the Gia, is I was trying to go down that route to get some knowledge, and then I couldn't very easily get it. And so it kind of was like, well, I guess I'll just figure it out on my own. And then that's been the problem of, you know, making it slow and making it wrong and making it take longer than it should have. But so if anybody has an idea how to get knowledge like that without having to go through the process of a, you know, an actual school, let me know, because I still would like to learn that stuff. I just don't have the time to like start a degree. You know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. It's funny. A lot of times the masters in these particular fields, they're not on social media. They're not on YouTube. They probably never went to school. They just grew up in this environment. Like my family, I would consider them master fabricators, and they make and repair race car chassis. And so, and they didn't go to school for that. They just, like, my uncle was always welding and fixing things. And then my cousin just picked it up because he grew up in that. And now my cousin has taken over the business, and he's a master welder, but he's not giving tutorials on YouTube. It's just kind of funny. Like these masters, they're not out there teaching. It's just, they don't even know that they're masters. They just grew up in it, and that's just their life.
It always amazes me when you meet. There are two circumstances. Whenever I've gone to a boat show, for instance, I've gone to a couple of canoe rendezvous because of the boat company, Bear Mountain Boats. And you see this beautiful canoe on the guy's roof of his car, or he's showing it off, whatever. And I'm like, oh, wow, was this like, it's just, oh, this is the only boat I ever made in my life. I actually don't even use tools. This is the first time. I'm like, this looks like it was made by a master carpenter.
Right.
Well, it was my first one. You know, there's a little chip here, and there's like this. I'm like, the seats are like woven wicker. I just watched a YouTube video. Like, this is insane. Yeah, well, I've been a doctor my whole life, but so I'm good with my hands. It's insane. So they've only made one boat. Or you go to a car show and you see this guy, like, what have you done? Oh, yeah. I've been a factory worker my whole life. You just restored this like 57 Chevy Bel Air in your garage? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they show you a picture of it like dragged out of a junkyard. You're like, this car looks like it just rolled off the factory. Oh, yeah, I've done it. I painted it myself. It's amazing the skills that people hide that they can actually do.
So it's, they're not making it for social media content. So they're just doing it when they can. Yeah. And they're taking their time. There's no deadline. There's no pressure. It's just like, oh, I'm going to learn how to weave this seat that I need to make.
Well, and also,
could you imagine?
Yeah. Also, not to minimize anybody's work, I don't mean that, but, or simplify it, but they might only be doing that. Like, that car could be the only extracurricular activity that they have. Maybe. I don't know. For us, every week or 2 weeks or whatever, we're like trying to come up with something else. We're making our own diversions constantly. Just like, I can't get too deep into this thing. I can't become this because I've got to make another one of these. And I've got to, which is self-inflicted. We chose to do that for our job. But that does, I think, play a part in how dedicated you can get to one thing, because we are constantly distracting ourselves on purpose to other things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that for me anyway. I know that I am. Like, I never will do anything more than a week or so at a time before I switch to something else. And I may come back around to it, but, you know, I don't dedicate myself to this thing for a long period of time to really knock it out. I think I did that with the pool house more than I've done it with anything else, because like the R2-D2 took a couple of years, but it was like I'd do something and then I'd wait a couple of months and I'd do something else. So it didn't feel like that. The pool house was step after step after step. I just tried to keep moving on it and, you know, move through it. And it's a bunch of different disciplines and stuff. But as a project, it was the most continuous I think I've been on something. Now, if I'd done that same type of approach for the car, it absolutely would be done by now. But it just, it whatever. There's many reasons why I didn't do that. But for somebody like that, who,
you know, works on a car, makes a boat, and they can just focus all of their free mind effort and time on doing that one thing on a regular basis, I can imagine that it would be better because they're more focused and on one thing and not take as long because they're just not distracted by other stuff all the time, I would assume.
Also, I have to imagine a lot of times the goal isn't to be finished. The goal is to have something to do and enjoy the journey, which is kind of hard for me at times because everything has a deadline.
Right.
Self-inflicted.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I mean, we've circled back around to the whole, like, you know, if this weren't the job, if it were a hobby, it would be a very different pace and a very different end result, and, you know, for all the stuff that we do. But
yeah, also, so I wouldn't trade this in for anything because I've done so many things that I never would have if it wasn't for YouTube.
Yeah. You know what I often do? I often will, and I do this with leather work. There's lots and lots about leather work that I don't know. There's lots of things that I wouldn't do because it looks too complicated or that it's just not, something doesn't pull me in. Like, I see guys hand stitch stuff all the time. Like, I don't want to get better at hand stitching. I don't have the time. So I think of everything that I can with what I am comfortable doing. So I'm trying to unlock the mystery of the most elegant, perfect solution in that bracket of what I'm comfortable doing. So I can come up with the most clever design with my skill set. That I don't have to learn anything else. So I don't have to learn. I don't have to get above that. And it's also a little bit of it's an insecurity crutch where it's like, I'm going to get as good as I can get right inside this compartmentalized area because I want to prove that I could do everything I can right here. That's all that you need versus stepping outside of that comfort zone and learning had a hand stitch that looks, I hand stitch, everything's flopped, it looks wrong. I'm like, how do you see these guys, like when you see like the guy make like a little robot out of leather, it's like, beep, zip, boop, pop, pop, zip, boop, boop, it's all audio. And then there's like a perfect like red leather robot. You've seen that Instagram. And I see that and I just go, that took like 5 days. This guy must have nothing to do, but it's beautifully done. So I could say, I'm going to use my laser and I'm going to cheat and I'm going to make the most perfect bag design. But at the same time, I have to like try and decide and figure out how to hide the laser aspect of it. Like, I'm like, these are all these like design parameters. I'm like, it's going to be made on a laser, so it's done quickly, but I'm also going to hide it. I don't want it to be explicit. I want it to look like it's handmade. And it is handmade, but it's also, Yeah.
It's funny.
It's a little fallback.
Yeah. I pick and excuse me. I pick and choose when I want to do something handmade or when I want to use a robot to help me with that. I think it depends on what the outcome is and what I want to do at the particular time. I have this, like 24 inch by 30 inch, cutout of David Lynch. I took a photo, I drew David Lynch in Illustrator. Made the silhouette and I had a digital file. I could have just laser cut the whole thing out, but I just got a new scroll saw and I wanted to cut it out and do that. And that piece has so much more meaning to me because I spent hours cutting that out by hand and I could have used digital tools, but that wasn't the point of that particular project. So I pick and choose when I want the robots to help and when I don't.
That is a really good point that actually connects to the video that I'm going to recommend today. I'll talk about it in a little bit, but yeah, making that choice is like sometimes getting it done quickly is not the best idea or not the ideal, you know? I fight that a lot because I think, you know, the impulse for me is to try to optimize, is to try to like keep moving. And I'm actively at this point in my life, actively trying to decide when it's worth to keep moving and when it's worth to just like settle for a minute and to do something slow, inconvenient, you know, do those things like the handwork is there's a lot of benefit to that. And I don't always have to find the fastest way to do things. Mm-hmm. And that's something I still kind of struggle with. I'm curious. Go ahead.
Sometimes I just need to prove to myself that I can do something. Like I've made a couple dovetail boxes. I've done that. Now I'm just going to do finger joints on the table saw, right? It's not to prove to anybody else but to myself.
That's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It fits perfect.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So, you know, I mentioned sewing. What other skills do you feel like you haven't, I don't know that you haven't done yet, but where an apprenticeship, a concentrated like brain dump from somebody or experience dump from one person to you, what are the things for you that situation would be really helpful for?
For me, it's mechanics. Every time I hang out with Dave Doherty from New Hampshire, he's going to listen to this and send me a nice message. He always does. Dave, I love you. But every single time I talk to Dave, he just like drops one little bit of knowledge that I'm like, I had no idea. Like, for instance, the other night I was driving the Caddy and it hesitates. Every time I hit the gas, it hesitates. It, like, sometimes it'll stall. And I told him, I described to him, and he goes, oh, there's probably water in the gas. There's probably water in the carburetor. He goes, well, next time I come up, we'll rebuild the carburetor. Like, we got to rebuild the carburetor? That's a lot of work, you know, but for him, it's like, oh, I'll bring a rebuild kit. We'll probably, you know, he'll do it in a couple hours. I wouldn't pull a carburetor off of that car. I'd be like, I don't want to mess with it. It's going to get worse. I'd rather drive with the hesitation than take the risk of fixing it. But because of his confidence and his know-how and his experience, he's like, yeah, we'll just take the carburetor off and we'll repair it. I'm like, okay, I'll be his apprentice in that moment in time so that whatever knowledge I learn and I realize it's not that complicated. It's just some screws and nuts and bolts and you just got to get the replacement gaskets and stuff. That's what the rebuild kit has. Then I'll have that confidence to do that same thing again versus like I'd pull it off and just send it out and just get another one. But he's like, yeah, we'll just rebuild it. He goes, next time I'm up, we'll rebuild the carburetor. I'm like, oh, okay. We'll just rebuild the carburetor.
Isn't that funny that type of thing it's a relative experience comfort thing? Because for you and me, rebuilding a carburetor, it's that feeling of like, no, that's black magic. I don't want to mess with that. Like, that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I'm just going to make it all worse.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the things that we individually have a lot of experience with, we are the Dave in that situation to somebody else. I was talking to a friend yesterday and we were talking about her house and things that she's doing in her house. And she's like, yeah, I got to have somebody come fix this drywall because we had some water leaking and I had this little patch. And I'm like, no, you don't need to hire somebody to do drywall. That's like super easy. She was like, no, that seems like I don't even know where to start. And it's the same situation where it's so easy because I've done it before, because I didn't know how to do it at one point and then did it enough to make it work. It's just funny because between the three of us, we have done to different degrees a lot of different things. And so to some people, we would be the help in that situation, but there's so many things that the three of us have never done that we need the help, you know. And it's just a relative experience thing, I guess, with people. It's just kind of weird. I don't know. Because when I think of Jimmy DiResta, I don't think of somebody who would not want to mess with a carburetor.
Yeah. No,
I think just, of myself like, that way. But
I've just swapped them. Like, I just, there's, you know, you buy a carburetor. I'm so bad. Rob always reminds me. He's like, hey, you got to like, we got to return this carburetor. It's like $400. So you buy a carburetor, it's like $800, but $400 of it you get back when you send the old one back. But I just put it in a box and put it on the side and forget. So I got like four carburetors sitting around from all the different cars. But I'm looking forward to watching Dave take this apart eventually. And the more I drive the Cadillac, every day I'm taking it out a little bit. I got it registered now. So every time I take it out a little bit, I drive down the block and drive around and then I come back. I don't have a spare because when I had all the tires replaced, I had all the tires, new tires put on the rims, and I brought the rims to the store to do it. I didn't bring the car, I brought the rims, and they broke one of the valve stems on the original valve stem from the car, and they didn't have a replacement. So they put what they thought would work and that doesn't work. And then they don't sell the valve stems for 1970s cars anymore. it comes up and goes directly at a right angle. So it comes out of the rim and goes directly at a right angle through the stamping. So it pokes out straight out. Nowadays, you go to fill an air thing and it's like a little 1-inch thing sticking directly out of the rim. The old, most of the 70s cars, it comes up and goes right angle, points straight out of the rim. And they don't sell those in the store anymore. So you can't just go to Napa and get a valve stem. They sell ones that have like a big elbow in them for like a truck tire, but it doesn't fit. So I spent Saturday morning running around trying to get this valve stem changed and nobody has it. So I bought them on eBay. When they come back, long story short, I'm driving on the spare, which happens to be the same exact tire as the rest of them. So I don't have a spare. So God forbid I drive around and I get a flat and I don't even have a tire to put on as a spare because there's no spare. Like no tire would even fit on the car that I could safely make it back. So I'm not taking it too far. I'm just driving it around the property and just down to the truck stop next door. But I'm developing the confidence and that hesitation in the gas is slowly starting to go away as I burn through some of the old gas. But I'm going to let Dave rebuild the carburetor if he's up for it, just to watch.
Oh, you should have him teach you how to do it. You should rebuild the carburetor.
No, 100%. We'll pick a video of it too. In fact, I have on the tow truck, and we talked about this, and the Cadillac, I've been collecting all the little bibs and bobs of information the entire time so I could put together a sequence on both of them. Right now, the tow truck, I am in the process, the slow, drawn-out process of trying to figure out what's wrong with the hydraulic system in the back. And I've drained the 15 gallons of hydraulic fluid out of the tank the other day to try and get inside there and see if there's something stuck on the... I'm going to try and troubleshoot the whole system. It's not flowing. The hydraulic fluid is not flowing through the system. So I'm assuming the tank is all clogged up with junk in the bottom. Just so I'm going to look at that, and I'm going to possibly change the pump. It's probably the simplest problem, but when I pull the pump off, I'm going to have to replace all the hoses that go to the pump because they're all so corroded. I don't see them unscrewing very simply without being destroyed. So it is, and this is my own apprenticeship, is attacking something like this and just trying to figure it out to the fullest of my ability. Occasionally asking friends.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Cool.
Any other thoughts on... Life is an ongoing apprenticeship.
Yeah. Any other apprenticeship thoughts? Ideas? Anything?
No, I guess I'm going to be at DIY Con in September, and I talked to the organizers the other day, and we came up with a concept of my speech or my talk, and it's going to be what I always talk about, which is stepping outside your comfort zone, and I have to remind myself that every day. I got to remind myself, it's like, do I really want to open up this can of worms? it's like the question I always say, it's like, how much time do I have? Do I really want to open this can of worms? Do I want to rip this set of stairs down? Do I want to? So it's an ongoing negotiation.
Can of worms is a good, that would make for a really good t-shirt. Don't steal that idea. I'm going to do that. All right. Wrote that down so I don't forget it. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. And we're really grateful for the support. Huge thanks to everybody over there at every level. It all matters. And it's all really, really cool, that you all support the show, especially our top supporters though, because they definitely do more than they need to. And we're really grateful for that. That's Works by Solo, Tinia Space Industries, the new Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Master of None, Jim from Wiser Bees, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also, people like Eric Thompson, who has been supporting for about 2 years, and that's amazing. Everybody gets the after show. It's a separate podcast feed you get from Patreon. So go to patreon.com/makingit and sign up at whatever level you want. I mean, do a dollar and you get the after show every time. And there's links there for the video after show on YouTube if you want to watch it there, but you can also just put the link in your podcast player and you get it like this show. So go do that if you are so inclined. We're really grateful for the support. I've got a pretty cool one to recommend this week. Do you guys have anything you want to recommend?
Jimmy?
Yeah, I was going to recommend Spark's Cycle Works that I described before. Matt came over and put the motor in the go-kart. He did a really nice document. I always love when other people film me and I'm not really paying close attention to what they're doing, and then I get to see the whole edit. So he put out a full video. It's probably 10 or 15 minutes long, of him coming to my place and doing the motor, and then just him following me and videotaping my idiosyncrasies and my weird little habits, which is, he did a great job. I'm really, really happy with it. And I said, just don't make me look as fat as I actually am. That's what I asked. He did a good job.
Yeah, there's a no back fat rule shot in my shop, by the way.
Yeah. I said, as long as I don't look like a refrigerator box in a t-shirt, you could do whatever you want.
You guys are weird.
So check out, I just linked the video to you guys.
Mine is just a channel that just came up. The algorithm served it to me. Dominic Hart. And the video is called 3 years ago, I built a shed. My life will never be the same. And just cool, well-made little videos of this dude's making journey. I like them. And I am now a subscriber.
Right on. Cool. I'll check that out. Mine is also a channel that I never heard of. It just popped up. Specifically, the video is called Your Life is Not a Task to Optimize. And it's a, let's see, the channel is called, I should have been better prepared. The channel is called Ottilie, Ottilie. Guess that's her name. I don't know. I don't know what her name is. She seems to be, I only watched like two videos. She seems to be somebody who really likes to create art as a hobby, not as like a, I'm a job artist type person. And I think most of the videos are, you know, they have something to say. And so she's covering like an idea, whatever. In this one, you know, it's really talking about just the title, like your life is not something to optimize, to burn through, to figure out the fastest, most efficient way to do things. Like we've become that way, but that's really not what life is for. You know, it's not to find the fastest way to live your days and to make everything as quick as possible to fit the most stuff in. And she does a really good job of talking about how intentionally doing things that take a longer time has all these benefits and stuff. It's just a really, it's a nice video. It has a really good point. And the other one, I don't remember the, which other one I watched from her, but it was also good. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's a good, thoughtful, nice, encouraging, you know, it's just good. So go check that out. But I think it was a good reminder to me that I need to slow down and not try to make everything efficient, because that is definitely something I do and it's not always good. Yeah, that's what I got. You guys got anything else for today? Again, no show next week because of me, and David will be finishing up for his art show, which is super exciting. So,
and everybody in my life will think I have a podcast,
and we'll see you.
So
what'd you say?
I said everybody in my life will think I'm doing my podcast, so they don't bother me.
Yeah,
you will be busy.
Enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
You need
everybody.
To have a public calendar where people can book time. Sorry, Bob. You need to have a public calendar so people can see when you're available.
You know what? We don't do pet peeves on this. A lot of podcasts these days do pet peeves. One of my biggest pet peeves is when somebody reaches out to me and they ask me to book time with them. I don't care who it is. If you send me an email and like, oh, book a time to talk with me, I am immediately ignoring you. Yeah. Don't send me an opportunity to come talk to you and then I have to book the time with you. Click a link, which is going to erase my YouTube channel. No way. No way.
That's yeah. It. Something, eventually we'll end the show, but something I learned a long time ago while working at the ad agency is when you need somebody's time, to just don't ask when you're available. give them 2 to 3 times right there in that first communication. It cuts mm-hmm. down so much back and forth.
Yeah.
And it makes it, and it makes the event, a little bit more, gives it a little bit more, it's real. Like this, this is a thing. And narrow down their choices. Don't just give somebody an open book to choose, because they won't choose.
Can you imagine the corporate chutzpah to be like, I want to talk to you, but you have to book the time on my calendar?
This
is there
a pet
anybody
peeve.
In this it world is. That's clicked that link to set up time to talk to somebody that's reached out to me? Is anybody in the world ever done that?
Yeah, and I can tell you, let's do this in the after show. Okay. Let's minimize the fallout of what we say. How about that?
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Love you.